killed. She gave me a tired smile. Welcome to Sheol One. Lys gave me directions to Amarotic House, where Seb had been taken by the Grey Keeper, the ref that kept the small number of Amarotic workers in check. His name was Graphius Sheraton. She gave me some bread and meat to slip to Seb. Don't let Graphius see you, she said. I'd learned a lot in the space of 40 minutes. The most troubling revelation was that I was on Nashira's radar, and I wasn't too keen on being her spirit slave for time everlasting. Not going straight to the heart of the ether, the place where all things die, was something I'd always feared. I hated the thought of being a restless spirit, a clip of spare ammo for voyants to abuse and trade. Still, that had never stopped me summoning spools of spirits to protect myself, or bidding on Jax's behalf for a very angry Anne Naylor, who'd been a young girl when she was murdered. And Lys's warning unnerved me. In the end, you'll just stop trying. She was wrong. Amarotic House was outside the main network of residences. I had to go through several abandoned streets to reach it. I'd seen maps of the city in an old copy of The Roaring Boy, yet another bit of memorabilia Jax had swindled from Dedian Waite, and I knew at least roughly where most of its landmarks were. I headed north up the main road. A few red jackets were stationed outside buildings, but they only gave me passing glances. There must be some kind of barrier to stop us escaping. That and the mines in No Man's Land. How many voyants had died trying to cross it? I found the building within a few minutes. It was discreet and austere, with a small iron lunette over the gates. Whatever words had been there had been replaced with Amarotic House. There was a phrase in Latin underneath, Domus Deltorum. I didn't want to know what it meant. I peered between the bars, unlocked gazes with a refate guard. He had dark curling hair that spilled over his shoulders, and his lower lip was full and petulant. This must be Graphius.
I hope you have good reason to be near Amarotic House, he said, his deep voice thick with scorn. All reason faded from my mind. The proximity of this creature made me cold to the bone.
No, I said, but I have these. I held out my pneuma. Rings, thimbles, needles. Graphius gave me a look of such hatred, such disgust, that I flinched. I almost prefer their callous stares.
I do not take bribes, nor do I require worthless human trinkets to access the ether.
I slipped the worthless human trinkets back into my pocket. Stupid idea. Of course they didn't use the damn things. It was a beggar's currency. Sorry, I said.
Get back to your residence, White Jacket, or I will summon your keeper to discipline you.
He drew a spill of spirits. I turned and walked away from the gate, out of his line of sight, not looking back. Just as I was about to hightail it to Maudlin, a quiet voice came from somewhere above my head. Page, wait. A hand reached through the bars of a second floor window. My shoulder sagged in relief. Seb.
Are you okay?
No.
He sounded choked. Please, Paige, please get me out of here. I have to get out of here. I'm sorry I called you unnatural. I'm sorry.
I glanced over my shoulder. No one was looking my way. I climbed up the side of the building, reached into my tunic, and slipped Seb the food package. I'll let you off the hook. I squeezed his icy hand through the bars. I'll try my best to get you out. But you have to give me time.
They'll kill me.
He unwrapped the package with his shaking fingers.
I'll be dead before you get me out.
What do they do?
They maybe scrubbed the floors until my hands bled, and then I had to sort through broken glass, looking for clean pieces for their ornaments.
I noticed his hands, cut all over, deep, dirty cuts.
Tomorrow I'm supposed to start work in the residences.
What sort of work?
I don't know yet. I don't want to know. Do they think I'm one of you?
His voice was hoarse.
Why do they want me?
I don't know. His right eye was swollen and bloodshot.
What happened there? One of them hit me. I didn't do anything, Paige, really. He said I was human scum, he said.
He hung his head, and his lip shook.
This was only his first day, and already they'd used him as a punchbag. How would he survive a week or a month, or a decade like Liz? Eat that. I clasped his hands around the food package. Try and come to Magdalen tomorrow. Is that where you live? Yes. My keeper probably won't be there. You can take a bath, maybe get some food, okay? Seb nodded. He seemed delirious. No doubt he was concussed. He needed a hospital, a proper doctor. But there was no doctor here. Nobody cared about Seb. There was nothing more I could do for him tonight. I gave his arm a gentle squeeze before I dropped from the window, landed on my feet, and headed back towards the inner city. Chapter 6. Community. I was back at the residence by dawn. The red-clad day porter gave me a spare key to the warden's chamber. "Leave it on his desk," he said. "Don't even think about keeping it." I didn't answer. I went up the dark staircase, avoiding the two guards. It chilled me how their eyes shone in the passages, natural searchlights in the dark. This was supposed to be a safe residence. I couldn't imagine what the others must be like. The bells chimed from the tower, calling the humans back to their prisons. Once I was in the chamber, I locked the door and left the key on the desk. No sign of the warden. I found a box of matches in a drawer and used them to light a few candles. There were three identical pairs of black leather gloves in the same drawer, and a broad silver ring set with a red jewel. A curio cabinet stood against the wall, made of dark rosewood. When I opened the glass-fronted doors, my sixth sense twinged. A collection of instruments sat inside. Some I recognized from the black market. Some were Numa. Most were just bric-a-brac. A planchette, some chalk, a spirit slate. Useless bits of seance equipment. The sort of thing Amarotics hysterically associated with clairvoyance. Others, like the crystal ball, could be used to scry by seers. I wasn't a soothsayer. None of the objects were useful to me. Like Raphius, I didn't need objects to touch the ether. What I needed was life support. Until I could find some oxygen apparatus, I'd have to be careful how often I detached my spirit. That was how I widened my perception of the ether. I could push my spirit from its natural place, to the farthest edges of my dreamscape. Problem was that if I did it for too long, my breathing reflex stopped dead. Something caught my eye. A small case, rectangular, with a stylized heartwood flower engraved in the lid. 8 petals. I flipped the clasp and opened it. Inside were 4 crimp vials, each containing a viscous liquid. Such a dark red it was almost black. I closed it. I didn't want to know. A dull pain stabbed at my eye. I couldn't see any nightclothes. Why I'd expected them, I had no idea. He didn't care what I wore or how well I slept. His only concern was that I drew breath. I kicked off my boots and lay on the day bed. The room was cold as stone without a fire, but I didn't dare touch the sheets on his bed. I set my cheek against the velvet bolster. The flux attack had left me weak and tired. As I drifted on the verge of sleep, my spirit wandered in and out of the ether. I brushed past dreamscapes, catching waves of memory. Blood and pain were common denominators. There were other refs in this residence, but their minds were as impenetrable as ever. The humans were more open, their defenses thinned by fear. Their dreamscapes gave off a harsh, tainted light, a signal of distress. Eventually I slept. I woke to the sound of floorboards creaking. I opened my eyes to see the warden come through the doorway. Aside from the 2 remaining candles, his eyes were the only light. He walked across the room towards my corner. I feigned sleep. Finally, after what seemed like eons, he left. This time his footsteps were less cautious, and I could tell from their pattern that he was sporting a heavy limp. The bathroom door slammed shut behind him. What could injure such a creature as a Rafate? He was gone for a few minutes. In that time I could count every heartbeat. When the lock turned in the door, I dropped my head back into my arms. Warden stepped out, naked as sin. I closed my eyes. I kept up my act as he moved towards the four-poster, knocking a glass orb to the floor. Ripples flickered through the ether. He wrenched the drapes around the bed, concealing him from view. Only when his mind quietened did I open my eyes and sit up. No movement. Barefoot, I approached the bed and I slid my fingers between the drapes, opening them just enough to see him. He lay on his side, covered by the sheets, his skin glistening in the half-light. His hair was snarled over his face. As I watched, a dim light spread through the bedding, close to where his right arm lay. I brushed his dreamscape. Something was different. I couldn't get much from it, but it wasn't quite as it should be. Every dreamscape had a kind of invisible light, an inner glow, imperceptible to amaurotic senses. Now his vital light was going out. He was still as the grave. When I looked down at the sheets, I found them spotted with a softly luminous, yellow-green liquid. It had a thin, metallic scent. My sixth sense felt as if it was being plucked, as if I was inhaling the ether. I rolled the heavy bedclothes down. A bite oozed on the inside of his arm. I swallowed. I could see the faint imprints of teeth, skin ripped in a vicious frenzy. The wound wept beads of light. Blood. It was his blood. He must have told the other Rephaim he was going somewhere. They would have known he was doing something dangerous. There was no way they could find the evidence to blame me if he died. Then I remembered what Liz had said to me in the shack. Refs aren't human. No matter how much they look like us, they're not like us. Like they would care if there was no evidence. They could fabricate evidence. They could say whatever they liked. If he died in this bed, they could easily claim I'd smothered him. It would give Nashira an excuse to kill me early. Maybe I should do it. This was my chance to get rid of him. I'd killed before. I could do it again. I had three options. I could sit here and watch him die, kill him, or try and stop it. I'd rather watch him die, but I sensed it might be better to save him. I was reasonably safe in Maudlin. The last thing I wanted to do at this stage was move. He hadn't hurt me yet, but he would. To own me, he would have to subjugate me, torture me, make me obey by any means necessary. If I killed him now, I might save myself. My hand reached for a pillow. I could do it. I could suffocate him. Yes, come on, kill him. I flexed my fingers, grasped the cotton. Kill him. I couldn't. He'd wake up. He'd wake up and break my neck. Even if he didn't, I wouldn't be able to escape. The guards outside would string me up for murder. I had to save him. Something told me not to touch the sheets. I didn't trust that liquid. The glow said radioactive, and I couldn't forget signs warning of contamination. I went to the drawer and pulled on a pair of his gloves. They were massive, made for Rafate hands. My fingers lacked dexterity. I ripped up one of the cleaner sheets, flimsy things, useless for warmth. Once I had a few long strips, I took them to the bathroom and soaked them in hot water. This might not work, but it might just buy him a few hours to wake up and seek treatment from the other Rephaim, if he was lucky. Back in the chamber, I steeled my nerves. Warden looked and felt like death. The cold seeped through the gloves. His skin had a grey tinge. I wrung out the sheet and set to work on the wound. At first I was cautious, but he didn't stir. He wasn't going to wake. Outside, through the windows, the play of sunlight began to change. I squeezed water in the wound, cleaned away the blood, mangled coaxed grit from the flesh. After what seemed like hours, I'd finally made a dent in the mess. I could see the rise and fall of his chest, the soft surge in his throat. I used another sheet to pad the wound, secured the makeshift wadding with the sash of my tunic, then pulled the bedding over his arm. It was up to him to survive now. I woke a few hours later. I could tell from the silence that the room was unoccupied.
The bed was made. The sheets had been replaced. The drapes were tied with embroidered sashes, waxing the walls in the light of the moon. Warden was gone. The windows dripped with condensation. I went to sit by the fire. I couldn't have imagined the whole encounter, not unless I was still having flux flashes, but I had taken the antidote. My blood was clean, so that meant Warden, for whatever reason, had left again. There was a fresh uniform laid out on the bed, along with a second note. Written in the same bold hand, it simply read, "Tomorrow." So he hadn't passed away in his sleep, and my training was delayed for yet another day. The gloves were gone. He must have taken them. I went to the bathroom and scrubbed my hands with hot water. I changed into my uniform, popped the 3 pills from their packets, and washed them down the sink. I would find out more today. I didn't care what Liz said. We couldn't just accept this. I didn't care if the refs had been here for 200 years or 2 million. I would not let them abuse my clairvoyance. I wasn't their soldier, and she wasn't their lunch. The night port assigned me out of the residence. I headed into the rookery and bought a bowl of porridge. It tasted as bad as it looked, like cement, but I forced myself to eat it. The performer whispered that Sewell was on the prowl. I couldn't sit down to eat. Instead, I asked her whether she knew where I might find Julian, describing him in as much detail as I could. She told me to check at the central residences, giving me their names and locations before she returned to her paraffin stove. I stood in a dark corner. As I ate, I watched the people milling around me. They all had the same dead eyes. Their bright clothes were almost offensive, like graffiti on a headstone. "Makes you sick, doesn't it?" I looked up. It was the Whisperer who was detained with me that first night. She wore a filthy bandage on her arm. Looking bored, she sat down beside me. "Tilda." "Paige," I said. "I know. I hear you ended up at Magdalen." She had a roll of paper in her hand. Smoke wafted thickly from the end, smelling of spice and perfume. I recognized the bouquet of purple aster. "Here." "I don't, thanks." "Come on, it's just a bit of regal. Better than Tincto." Tincto, laudanum, was the favored vice for those amarotics willing to risk altering their mental state. Not all of them liked Floxy. Occasionally, an amarotic would be arrested on suspicion of unnaturalness, only for the NVD to discover they'd been poisoning themselves with Tincto. It didn't do much for Voyance. It wasn't strong enough to dent our dreamscapes. Tilda must use it for the sake of it. "Where did you get it?" I said. I couldn't imagine the refs allowing the use of ethereal drugs. "There's a gallipot in here who sells it by the donop. He says he's been here since bone season 16. "He's been here 40 years? "Since he was 21. I got talking to Malia. He seems all right." She offered her roll. "Sure you don't want to smolder?" "I'll pass." I paused to watch her smoke. Tilda had the dab hand of an aster junkie, or courtier, as they called themselves. Only they would call a pound a donop. She might be able to help me. "Why aren't you training?" "Keep us gone somewhere." "Why aren't you training?" "Same reason." "Who's your keeper?" "Terrabelle Sheraton. She seems like a bit of a bitch. But she hasn't tried to slate me yet." "Right." I watched her smoke. "Do you know what's in the pills they give us?" Tilda nodded. "The little white one is the standard contraceptive. Surprised you haven't seen it before." "Contraceptive? What for?" "To stop us breeding, obviously. And bleeding. I mean, would you want to punch out a sprog in this place?" She had a point. "The red one?" "Iron supplement." "And the green one?" "What?" "The third pill." "There is no third pill." "It's a capsule," I pressed. "Sort of olive green. Tastes bitter." Tilda shook her head. "No idea, sorry. If you bring me one, I can take a look at it." My gut clenched. "I will," I said. She was about to take a mouthful of fumes when I interrupted. "You went with Carl, didn't you? At the oration?" "I don't associate with that turncoat." I raised an eyebrow.
Tilda exhaled lilac smoke. Didn't you hear? He's turned nose. That palmist Ivy, the one with the blue hair. He caught her sneaking food from Arotti. Blue to her keeper. You should see what they did to her. Go on. Beat her. Shaved her head. I don't want to talk about it. Her hand shook just a little. If that's what you have to do to survive in this place, then send me to the ether. I'll go quietly. Silence stretched between us. Tilda tossed away her roll of aster. Do you know which residence Julian is at? I said after a while. 26. The ball guy. Trinity, I think. You can have a look through the gates at the back. That's where the rookies have been training, on the lawns. Just don't let any of them see you. I left her to light another roll. Aster was a killer. Possibly the most abused plant on the streets. Addiction was rife in places like Jacob's Island. Its flowers came in white, blue, pink, and purple, each of which had a different effect on the dreamscape. Eliza was addicted to white aster for years. She told me all about it. In comparison with blue, which restored memories, white aster produced an effect we called whitewashing, or partial memory loss. For a while she'd forgotten her own last name. Later she got hooked on purple, saying it helped with her art. She'd made me swear never to touch any ethereal drug, and I saw no reason to break that promise. It chilled me to discover that I had an extra pill, unless Tilda was unusual to have two. I'd have to ask someone else. The residence of Trinity was guarded on the street side. I skirted round the edges of the shantytown, using my limited knowledge of the city to work out where the back of the residence would be. I ended up outside the palisade that enclosed its massive grounds. Tilda had been right. There was a group of white jackets on the lawn, directed by a female ref. Julian was among them. They were using flanged batons to push spirits through the air, working by the light of green gas lamps. At first I thought they were Numa, objects through which the ether could flow, from which soothsayers drew their power, but I'd never seen objects being used to control spirits. I let my sixth sense take over. The dreamscapes of the humans were all clustered together in the ether, with a ref acting as a sort of linchpin. They were drawn to her like insects to a hanging lantern. The ref chose that moment to pick on Julian. She swiped her baton, sending an angry spirit hurtling towards him. He crashed to the ground on his back, stunned. On your feet, 26. Julian didn't move. Stand up. He couldn't do it. Of course he couldn't. He'd just been hit in the face by a furious spirit. No one could just stand up after that. His keeper delivered a hard kick to the side of his head. The white jackets all stumbled back, as if she might turn on them next. She gave them a cold look before she swept away to the residence, her black dress billowing behind her. The humans exchanged glances before they followed. Not one of them stayed to help Julian. He lay on the grass, curled into the fetal position. I tried to push the gates open, but they caught on a heavy chain. Julian, I called. He twitched, then raised his head. When he saw me, he pushed himself back up and walked to the gates. His face glistened with sweat. Behind him, the lanterns went out. She likes me really, he said, his mouth tweaked in a half smile. I'm a star pupil. What kind of spirit was it? Just an old ghost. He rubbed his raw eyes. Sorry, still seeing things. What do you see? Horses, books, fire. The ghost had left an impression of its death. It was an unpleasant aspect of spirit combat. Which ref was that? I said. Her name's Aludra Curtin. I don't know why she volunteered to be a keeper. She hates us. They all hate us. I looked at the lawn. Aludra hadn't returned. Can you come outside? I can try. He raised a hand to his head, grimacing. Has your keeper fed on you yet? I've barely seen him. Something told me not to mention what had happened the night before. Aludra fed on Felix yesterday. He couldn't stop shaking when he came round. She still made him train. Was he okay? Terrified. Couldn't feel the ether for 2 hours.
They're insane to do that to a Voyant.
I looked over my shoulder, checking for guards. I won't let them feed on me. You may not have a choice. He unhooked a lantern from the gate. Your keeper has quite the reputation. You say you've barely seen him. He always leaves. Why? No idea. Julian looked at me for a long time. This close, I saw he was full-sighted, like this. Half-sighted people could switch their spirit sight on and off, but Julian was forced to see the little threads of energy all the time. Let me come outside, he said. I haven't eaten since yesterday morning. Evening. Whatever. Can you get permission? I can ask for it. I watched his shadow disappear into the residence. It occurred to me that he might never come out. I waited for him near the rookery. I was about to give up when a flash of white tunic caught my eye. Julian emerged through a small doorway, his hand over his face. I beckoned him. What happened?
The inevitable.
He sounded congested. She said I could have food, but I wouldn't be able to smell it or taste it. He took his hand away from his face. I drew in a sharp breath. Thick, dark blood seeped down his chin. Bruises were beginning to form under his eyes. His nose was red and swollen, shot with broken vessels. You need ice. I pulled him behind a plywood wall. Come on, the performers will have something to treat it. I'm all right. I don't think it's broken. He touched the bridge of his nose. We need to talk. We'll talk with food. As I made my way through the rookery with Julian, I searched for any sign of a weapon. Even something crude would do. A sharp hairpin, a shard of glass or metal. Nothing jumped out at me. If the performers really were unarmed, they had no way to defend themselves if the Amim were to breach the city. The refs and the red jackets were their only protection. Inside the food shack, I forced Julian to eat a bowl of skilly and some toke, then slipped my remaining pneuma to a soothsayer in exchange for a stolen pack of acetaminophen. He wouldn't tell me who he had stolen it from, or how he'd done it, and he vanished into the crowd as soon as the needles were in his hand. He must be a real occultomancer. I moved Julian to a dark corner. Take these, I said. Don't let anyone see. Julian didn't say anything. He popped 2 capsules and washed them down. I found a cloth and some water in an empty shack. He used it to mop up the drying blood. So, he said a little thickly, what do we know about the Amim? Nothing on my end. I've been finding out a bit about how this place works, if you're interested. Of course I'm interested. The White Jackets go through the basics for a few days. Mostly spirit combat, showing you can make spools, that kind of thing. Then you get your first test. That's when you have to verify your gift. Verify it? Prove it's useful. Soothsayers have to make a prediction, mediums have to incite a possession. You get the picture. What do they count as useful? You have to do something to prove your loyalty. I spoke to the porter at Trinity about it. He didn't want to say much. But he said his prediction got somebody else brought into Sheol 1. You have to show them what they want to see, even if it puts another human in danger. My throat tightened. And the second test? Something to do with the Amim. I guess you get to be a red jacket if you live. My gaze wandered across the shack. There were 1 or 2 yellow tunics among the performers. Look, Julian said, keeping his voice low. The one in the corner. Her fingers. I followed his line of sight. A young woman was scooping up her skilly, talking to a sickly-looking man. 3 of her fingers were stumps. When I looked around the room again, I noticed other injuries, a missing hand, bite marks, claw-like scars on arms and legs. Guess they do have a taste for human flesh, I said. This hadn't lied. Looks like. Julian offered me his bowl. You want to finish this? No, thanks. We sat in silence for a while. I didn't look, but I couldn't stop thinking about the injuries these people had sustained. They'd been gnawed on like chicken bones, then thrown out with the rubbish. They were always at risk in this miserable, unprotected slum. I didn't want the Rephaim to know what I was. To pass the first test, I'd have to show them. Did I want to pass these tests? I ran my fingers through my hair, thinking. I'd have to wait and see what the warden expected me to do when he returned. He had so much control over my fate. After a few minutes of watching the performers, I spied a familiar face. Carl. There was a hush. The performers cleared a path for him, their gazes cast down. I craned over their heads and saw what they were looking at. His pink tunic. What was he doing in the rookery? Tilda told me he passed his first test, I said to Julian. What do you think he had to do? Just daub Ivy in? He's a soothsayer. He probably just had to find his dead aunt in a teacup, he said. That's augury. And aren't you a soothsayer? I never actually said I was a soothsayer. He gave me a faint smile. You're not the only one with a deceptive aura. That gave me pause for thought. Soothsayers were considered the lowest class of voyants, certainly the commonest. He might find the label insulting. Or maybe I wasn't as good at identifying voyants as Jax had claimed I was. Jax. I wondered what he was doing. Whether or not he was worried about me. But of course he was worried about me. I was his dreamwalker, his mollisher. How he would find me, I didn't know. Maybe Danny or Nick could work it out. They had scion careers. There must be a database of prisoners somewhere, hidden by the Arkan. They're trying to bribe him. Julian watched two performers. They were holding out Numa to Carl, talking to him. They must think he has sway over the refs now. It did look that way. Carl waved them off and they retreated. Julian, I said, how many pills do you get? One. What does it look like? Round and red. Think it's iron. He swallowed his skilly. Why? How many do you get? Of course. Cyan did produce an injection for male contraception, but it made no sense to sterilize both sexes. I was saved from answering the question by Carl. So then I looked into the stone, he was saying to a white jacket, watched by several Harleys, and I decided to scry for her desires. Turns out she's very keen on finding this white binder. And of course, as soon as I saw his face, I knew precisely where he was. Apparently he's the Mime Lord of First Four. A deathly cold swept over me. That was Jackson. Paige? Julian said. I'm fine. Won't be a second. Before I knew it, I was walking straight towards Carl. His eyes popped when I grabbed his tunic and dragged him into a corner. What did you see? My voice came out as a hiss. Carl stared at me as if I'd grown a second head. What? What did you tell her about the white binder, Carl? It's 2059-1. I don't care. Tell me what you saw. I don't see what business it is of yours. He eyed my white tunic. You don't seem to have progressed as quickly as everyone thought you would. Did you disappoint your special keeper? I moved my face so it was about 2 inches away from his. He looked even more like a rat at this proximity. I'm not playing games, Carl, I said, my voice low. And I don't like turncoats. Tell me what you saw. The nearest lanterns flickered. Nobody seemed to notice. The performers had already turned their attention to other things. But Carl did. There was a glint of fear in his eyes. I didn't see exactly where he was, he admitted. But I did see a sundial. You scried it? Yes. What does she want with the binder? My grip on his tunic tightened. I don't know, I just did what she said. He pulled away from me. Why are you asking all this? Blood roared in my ears. No reason. I let go of his tunic. I'm sorry. I'm just nervous about the tests. Carl softened. Flattered. That's understandable. I'm sure you'll get your next color soon. And what happens after that? After pink? We join the battalion, of course. I can't wait to get my hands on those filthy buzzer bastards. I'll be red in no time. He was already under their spell. Already a soldier. A killer in the making. I forced a smile and left. Carl had reason to be proud. He was a good seer. He had used Nashira to call a subject into focus, to see it in the gleaming surface of whichever Newman he favoured. That was the gift of soothsayers, as well as some augurs. They could dovetail their gifts with the desires of another person, the querent, in order to read their future. Cardomancers and palmists did it all the time, and no matter what Jackson said, it often came in handy. The ether was like the Cyanet, a network of dreamscapes, each containing information that could be accessed at the click of a button. The querent provided a kind of search engine, a way to see through the eyes of drifting spirits. Carl had found the perfect querent in Nashira. Not only had he seen Jax, but he had also seen a clue as to his location, one of the 6 sundials on the pillar. I had to warn him. Soon. I didn't know what she wanted with Jax, but I wasn't going to let her bring him here. Julian followed me outside. Paige? He caught my sleeve. What did he say to you?
Nothing. You look pale.
I'm fine.
It was only when I caught sight of the toke in his hand that I remembered Seb.
Are you going to eat that?
No. You want it?
Not for me. Seb.
Where did you find him?
Amorotic House.
Right. So they lock up Voyance in London and Amorotic's here.
Maybe it makes sense to them. I pocketed the toke. I'll see you tomorrow.
Dusk?
Dusk.
He paused. If I can get out.
Amorotic House was dark when I arrived. Even the lamps outside had been extinguished. I knew better than to try and talk my way past Graphius. Instead, I climbed straight up the drainpipe.
Seb?
There was no light in the room. I could smell the dank, cold air inside it. Seb didn't reply. I grasped the bars and crouched on the ledge.
Seb,
I hissed.
Are you in there?
But he wasn't. There were no dreamscapes in this room. Even Amorotics had dreamscapes, albeit colourless ones. No emotional nuances, no spiritual activity. Seb had vanished. Maybe they'd taken him to a residence to work. Maybe he'd be back. Or maybe this was a trap. I pulled the toque from my sleeve, stuck it between the bars and climbed down the drainpipe. Only once I was back on solid ground did I feel safe. The feeling didn't last. As I turned back towards the inner city, my arm was caught in what felt like a vice. 2 scalding eyes, hot and hard, locked on mine. Chapter 7. The Bait. He was standing very still. He wore a black shirt with a high collar, edged with gold. Its sleeves concealed the arm I'd bandaged in the day. He gazed down at me with no expression. I wet my lips, trying to think of an excuse.
So, he said, drawing me closer, you bandage wounds and feed Amorotic slaves.
How quaint. Revulsion made me jerk my arm away. He let me do it. I could fight him if I wasn't cornered. But then I saw the others. 4 refs, 2 male and 2 female. All 4 had those iron-clad dreamscapes. When I took up a defensive stance, they laughed at me.
Don't be a fool, 40.
All we want to do is speak to you.
Speak to me now, I said. My voice was nothing like my own.
Warden had never taken his eyes off my face. In the light of a nearby gas lamp, those eyes boiled with a new color. He hadn't laughed along with the others. I was a hunted animal, surrounded. Trying to get out of this situation wouldn't just be stupid. It would be suicidal.
I'll go, I said.
Warden nodded.
Terrabel, he said. Go to the Blood Sovereign. Tell her we have 205940 in custody.
In custody?
I glanced at the female. This must be Tilda and Carl's keeper, Terrabel Sheraton.
She looked back at me with steady yellow eyes. Her hair was dark and glossy. It curved around her face like a hood.
Yes, Blood Consort, she said.
She went ahead of the escort party. I kept my eyes on my boots.
Come, Warden said. The Blood Sovereign is waiting. We walked towards the city centre. The guards dropped back, keeping a respectful distance from Warden. His eyes really were a different colour. Orange. He caught me looking. "If you have a question," he said, "you may ask." "Where are we going?" "To your first test. Anything else?"
"What bit do?"
He looked straight ahead. Then he said, "I rescind your invitation to speak." I almost bit my tongue in two. Bastard. I'd spent hours cleaning his wounds. I could have killed him. I should have killed him. Warden knew the city well. He led us down several different streets until we reached the back of another residence, the residence where we'd had our oration. A plaque outside read, "The residence of the suzerain." The guards bowed when he passed them, pressing their fists to their chests. Warden didn't acknowledge either of them. The gates closed behind us. The clang of the locks drew my muscles into bars. My eyes roved from wall to wall, from nook to cranny, seeking purchase for my hands and feet. Climbing plants grew thick and wild on the buildings, fragrant honeysuckle and ivy and wisteria, but only to a few feet above ground level. After that they were replaced by windows. We walked around a sand-coloured path encircling an oval of grass, where a single lamppost stood. Its light shone through panes of red glass. At the end of the path was a door. Warden didn't look at me, but he stopped. "Do not speak of the wounds," he said, almost too quietly to hear, "or you will have cause to regret saving my life." He motioned to his entourage. Two of them went to stand on either side of the door. The other, a curly-haired male with an arresting stare, came to stand on my other side. Flanked by guards, I was pushed through the door and into the cool interior of the building. The room I entered was narrow and ornate, with walls of ivory stone. The left wall was scattered with warm colours, light refracted by the stained glass windows, which seemed to drink in the glow of the moon. I could make out 5 memorial plaques, but I didn't have time to stop and read them. I was being led to where the light shone from an archway. Warden led me up 3 black marble steps, then dropped to one knee and bowed his head. I did the same when the guard stared at me. "Arcturus." A gloved hand lifted his chin. I risked a glance. Nishira had appeared. Tonight she wore a black dress that covered her from the neck down, rippling like water under the candlelight. She pressed her lips to Warden's forehead, and he placed his hand against her abdomen. "I see you have brought our little prodigy," Nishira said, eyes on me. "Good evening, 2040. She looked me up and down, and I had the sense that she was trying to read my aura. I threw up some precautionary barriers. Warden didn't move. I couldn't see his face. A line of refrain stood behind the pair, all hooded and cloaked. Their auras seemed to fill the chapel, jostling mine. I was the only human present. "I suppose you know why you're here," Nishira said. I kept my mouth shut. I knew I was in trouble for taking food to Seb, but I could be in trouble for a host of other things. Bandaging Warden, sneaking around, being human. Most likely Carl had reported my interest in his vision. Or maybe they knew what I was. "We found her outside Amarotic House," the guard declared. He was a spitting image of Pleione, right down to the shape of his eyes. "Sneaking around in the dark like a sewer rat." "Thank you, Elsafi." Nishira looked down at me, but didn't invite me to stand. "I understand you have been sneaking food to one of the Amarotic Hands, 40. Is there a reason for that?"
"Because you're starving him and beating him like an animal. He needs a doctor. A hospital!" My voice echoed around the dark chapel. The hooded Refame were silent.
"I am sorry you feel that way," Nishira said. "But in Rephite eyes, the eyes that now preside over your country, the human and the beast exist on the same level. We do not provide doctors for beasts." I could feel myself turn white with anger. But I bit back my next words. "I'd only get Seb killed." Nishira turned away. Warden stood. So did I.
You might remember from the Oration 40 that we like to test those humans we assemble during the bone seasons. You see, we send our red jackets after humans with an aura, but we cannot always identify what abilities that aura carries. I confess we have made mistakes in the past. A promising case might turn out to be no more exciting than an errant cartomancer, but no doubt you will be far more entertaining than that. Your aura precedes you. She beckoned. Come, show us your talents. Warden and Alsafi stepped away from me. Nashir and I were now facing each other across the room. My muscles tautened. Surely they didn't want me to fight her. I would lose. She and her angels would shatter my dreamscape. I could sense them circling her, waiting to defend their host. But then I remembered what Lys had told me, that Nashira wanted a dreamwalker. I thought fast. Maybe there was something I could do that she had no power to deter, some advantage I could use against her. I thought of the train. Without a dreamwalker or an oracle in her entourage, Nashira couldn't affect the ether, and unless she'd somehow consumed the spirit of an unreadable, I could still let my spirit loose in her mind. I could kill her. Plan A crumbled when Alsafi returned. He bore a frail figure in his arms, a figure with a black bag over its head. The prisoner was lowered into a chair and handcuffed there. My fingers turned numb. Was it one of the others? Had they found the dials? Found my gang? But I sensed no aura. This was an Amarotic. I thought of my father and felt sick, but the figure was too small, too thin. I believe you two know one another, Nashira said. They ripped off the bag. My blood ran cold. Seb. They'd got him. His eyes were swollen to the size of small plums. His hair hung in bloodied strings around his face, and his lips were cracked and bleeding. The rest of his face was caked in dry blood. I'd seen serious beatings before, when Hector's victims came crawling to the dials for aid from Nick, but never anything like this. I'd never seen a victim so young. The guard whacked another bruise onto his cheek. Seb was barely conscious, but he managed to look up at me. Paige. His broken voice made blood burn in my eyes. I rounded on Nashira. What have you done to him? Nothing, she said. But you will. What? It is time for you to earn your next tunic, 2040. What the hell are you talking about? Alsafi gave me such a blow in the head it damn near knocked me down. He grabbed me by the hair and yanked me around to face him. You will not use vulgarities in the presence of the Blood Sovereign. Hold your tongue or I will stitch your mouth. Patience, Alsafi. Let her be angry. Nashira raised a hand. After all, she was angry on the train. My ears were ringing. Two faces burst out from my memory. Two bodies on the carriage floor. One dead, one insane. My victims. My kills. That was my test. To earn my new colors, I had to kill an Amarotic. I had to kill Seb. Nashira must have guessed what I was. She had guessed that my spirit was capable of leaving its natural place in my body. That I was capable of swift, bloodless murder. She wanted to see it happen. She wanted me to dance. She wanted to know if this was a gift worth stealing. No, I said. Nashira was very still. No. When I was silent, she continued. Refusal is not an option. You will obey or we will be forced to dispose of you. No doubt the Grand Inquisitor would be pleased to correct your insolence. Kill me then, I said. Why wait? The 13 judges said nothing. Nor did Nashira. She just looked at me, into me, trying to work out if I was bluffing. Alsafi didn't beat about the bush. He grabbed my wrist and dragged me towards the chair. As I kicked and struggled, he wrapped a muscled arm around my neck. Do it, he snarled against my ear, or I will crush your ribs and drown you in your own blood. He shook me so hard my vision wobbled. Kill the boy. Do it now. No, I said. Obey. No. Alsafi squeezed harder. I dug my nails into his sleeve.
My fingers scrape down his side and find the knife at his belt. A paper knife. For cutting envelopes, but it would do. One stab was all it took to make him drop me. I staggered into a pew, the knife still in my hand. "Stay away," I warned. Nishira laughed. The judges echoed her. To them, after all, I was just another breed of performer. Another flimsy human with a head full of confetti and fireworks. But Warden didn't laugh. His gaze was soldered to my face. I thrust the point of the knife at him. Nishira walked towards me. "Impressive," she remarked. "I like you, 2040. You have spirit." My hand shook. Al-Safi glanced at the cut on his arm. Luminous fluid seeped from his skin. When I looked down at the knife, I saw the same stuff coated all over the blade. Seb was crying. I tightened my grip on the blade, but my hands were clammy. I couldn't use a paper knife against all these Rafaim. Besides, I could barely use irons, let alone throw a knife with precision. Save the 5 angels around Nishira, there were no spirits to make a spool. I would have to get much closer to cut Seb loose. After that, I would have to work out how to get us both out of here alive. "Arcturus, Aludra, disarm her," Nishira said. "Without spirits." One of the judges removed her hood. "With pleasure." I sized her up. It was Julian's keeper. She was a sly-looking creature, all sleek blonde hair and feline eyes. Warden stayed behind her. I measured their auras. Aludra was a feral thing. She might have appeared civilized, but I sensed she was only just stopping herself from slavering. She was spoiling for a fight, excited by Seb's weakness, and starving for my aura. She wanted some glow, and she wanted it now. Warden was darker, colder, his intentions obscure, but that made him more lethal. If I couldn't read his aura, I couldn't predict what he might do. I had a sudden thought. Warden's blood had made me feel closer to the ether. Maybe it would work again. I inhaled, holding the blade close to my face. The cold scent knocked my senses into overdrive. The ether wrapped around me like cold water, submerging me. With a flick of my wrist, I threw the knife at Aludra's face, aiming right between the eyes. She only just ducked. My accuracy had improved. A lot. Aludra seized a heavy candelabrum and whirled on me. "Come, child," she said. "Dance with me." I backed away. I was no use to Seb if my skull was in pieces. Aludra charged. Her mission, to do me down and feed on what was left. Without my heightened senses, she probably would have succeeded. I rolled to avoid her, and instead of crushing me, the candelabrum struck off the head of a statue. I was on my feet again at once, vaulting over the altar and sprinting across the chapel, past the hooded refs in the pews. Aludra recovered her weapon. I heard the whistle of air as she hurled it across the chapel. Seb screamed my name as it soared over his head. I'd been making for the open doors, but my escape was cut short. A guard slammed them closed from outside, locking me into the chapel with my audience. With no time to slow down, I ran straight into the doors. The impact struck the breath from my lungs. I lost my footing. My head hit solid marble. A split second later, the candelabrum smashed into the doors. I barely had time to move before it went crashing to the floor where my legs had been. The noise rang through the chapel like a stricken bell. There was a dull pain in the back of my skull, but I had no time to rest. Aludra had caught up with me. While her leather-clad fingers gripped my neck, her thumbs pressed against my throat, I choked. My eyes filled with blood, blinding me. She was taking my aura, my aura. Her eyes brightened to sweltering red. "Aludra, stop." She didn't seem to hear. I tasted metal. The knife lay beside me. My fingers inched towards it, but Aludra pinned my wrist. My turn now. I had one chance to live. As she held the knife to my cheek, I pushed my spirit into the ether. In spirit form, I saw through new eyes, on a new plane. Here I was sighted. The ether appeared as a silent void, studded with star-like orbs, each orb a dreamscape. Eluja was physically close to me. Her orb, consequently, wasn't too far away. It would be suicidal to try and break into her mind. It was very old, very strong. But her lust for glow had weakened her defenses. It was now or never. I flew into her mind. She wasn't ready, and I was fast. I reached her midnight zone before she realized what had happened. When she did, I was thrown out with the force of a bullet. I was back in my body before I knew it, staring at the ceiling of the chapel. Eluja was on her knees, clutching her head.
Get her out! Get her out!
She screeched.
She walks!
I scrambled to my feet, gasping for air, only to lurch into Warden, who caught me by the shoulders. His gloved fingers dug into my skin. He wasn't trying to hurt me, just to hold me, to restrain me. But my spirit was like a flytrap. It reacted to danger. Almost against my will, I tried the same attack. This time, I didn't even reach the ether. I couldn't move. Warden. It was him. This time, it was he who was sucking the energy out of me, leeching my aura. I could only watch in shock as I was drawn towards him like a flower to the sun. Then he stopped. It was as if a wire between us had snapped, and his eyes were bright red, like blood. I stared into them. He stepped back and looked at Nashira. Silence reigned. Then the hooded Rafaim stood and applauded. I sat on the floor, stunned. Nashira knelt beside me and placed a gloved hand on my head. Beautiful, my little dreamwalker. I tasted blood. She knew. Nashira stood and turned toward Seb, who had watched with as much fear as his injuries would allow. Now his barely open eye came to rest on her as she walked to the back of the chair. Thank you for your services. We are grateful. She placed her hands on either side of his head. Goodbye.
No, please, don't, please! I don't want to die, Paige!
She jerked his head to the side. His eyes widened and a gurgle came from in between his lips. She just killed him.
No!
The word ripped from my throat. I could hardly process it. I couldn't take my eyes off her.
You just...
Too late. Nashira let go of his head. It flopped. You could have done it 40. Painlessly. If only you'd done as I asked. It was her smile that did it. She was smiling. I ran at her, raw heat writhing in my blood. Warden and Alsafi grabbed my arms, hauling me back. I kicked and thrashed and struggled until my hair was lank with sweat. You bitch, I screamed. You bitch, you evil bitch! He wasn't even buoyant! True, he was not. Nashira walked around behind the chair. But Amarotic spirits make the best servants, don't you think? Alsafi was about to dislocate my shoulder. I clawed at Warden's arm, the bad one, the one I treated. He stiffened. I didn't care. I'll kill you, I said, and I aimed it at all of them. I could hardly breathe, but I said it. I'll kill you! I swear I'll kill you! No need to swear, 40. Let us swear for you. Alsafi threw me to the floor. My skull cracked against hard marble. My vision flashed. I tried to move, but something pinned me down. A knee on my back. My fingers dragged on the marble floor. Then a blinding pain in my shoulder. The most agonizing pain I'd ever felt. Hot. Too hot. The smell of roasted meat. I couldn't help but scream. We swear your undying allegiance to the Rafaim. Nashira never took her eyes off me. We swear it with a mark of fire. 2059-40. You are bound forever to the Warden of the Mazatim. You will renounce your true name as long as you shall live. Your life is ours. The fire was in my skin. I couldn't think of anything but the pain. This was it. They'd killed Seb, and now they were killing me. A needle caught the light. Chapter 8. Of My Name. There was too much flux in my blood. I ran in circles through my dreamscape. Flux had deformed it, made the shapes and the colors rupture. I heard my heart pounding, the air burning up my throat, through my nose.
They're killing me. I thought this as I fought against my mind, watching it crumble like wood in a furnace. This was it. Nishira knew what I was. She'd poisoned me, and now I was dying. It wouldn't be long after all. A dreamscape couldn't keep its shape in a dead body. Then the thought unraveled and slipped away, and I was left wandering through the dark parts of my head. Then I found it. My sunlit zone, where beauty lived. Safety. Warmth. I ran towards it, but it was like running through wet sand. The dark clouds clung to me, hauling me back into cloud and shadow. I struggled against the flux, kicking and twisting myself free of its hold, and tumbled like a seed into the sunlight, into the field of flowers. Everyone in the world had a dreamscape, the beautiful mirage inside their mind. In dreams, even Amarotic saw their sunlit zone, just not very clearly. Boyans could see into their own minds, live in there until they were starved to death. My sunlit zone was a field of red flowers, a field that rippled and changed depending on my mood. I saw flashes of the world outside my body, felt the roll in the earth as I emptied my stomach of my tiny meal. But in my mind I was calm, watching as flux wreaked havoc around me. I lay down in the flowers and waited for the end. I was back in the room at Maudlin. The gramophone was warbling nearby. Another of Jackson's blacklisted favorites. Did you ever see a dream walking? I was lying on my stomach on the daybed, naked from the waist up. My hair had been twisted into a knot. My hand went to my face. Skin. Cold, clammy skin. I was alive. In pain, yes. But alive. They hadn't killed me. I was too sore to lie still. I tried to sit up, but the weight of my head kept me from rising more than a few inches. The back of my right shoulder burned with a ferocious heat. A dull throb in my groin told me where I'd been injected, but this time the damage was deeper. Flux was one of the only drugs that worked better in an artery than it did in veins. My thigh was hot and swollen. My chest heaved. I was burning up. Whichever ref had done this had not only been very clumsy, but very cruel. I had a vague memory of Sewell leering at me before the lights went out. Maybe they had tried to kill me. Maybe I was dying. I turned my head to the side. A fire had been lit in the hearth, and someone was in the room. My keeper. He was sitting in his chair, staring at the flames. I gazed across the room, hating him. I could still feel his hands on me, holding me back, stopping me from saving Seb. Did he harbor any guilt for that pointless killing? Did he care about the helpless slaves at Amarotic House? I wondered if he cared about anything at all. Even his interactions with Nishira seemed mechanical. Did anything make this creature tick? He must have sensed my gaze, because he stood. I held still, scared to move. Too many parts of me hurt. Warden knelt beside the daybed. When he raised his hand, I flinched. He laid the backs of his fingers against my scorching cheek. His eyes had returned to neutral apple gold. My throat was sore, full of fever. His spirit, I forced out. It was agony to speak. Did it leave? No. It took all my strength to mask my pain. If no one had said the threnody, Seb would be forced to linger. He was still afraid, still alone, and worst of all, still a prisoner. Why didn't she kill me? The words chafed my throat. Why didn't she just get it over with? Warden ignored the question. After examining my shoulder, he took a chalice from the nightstand. It brimmed with dark liquid. I watched him. He lifted the chalice to my lips, taking the back of my head in one hand. I pulled against him. A soft growl escaped his throat.
It will ease a swelling in your leg, he said. Drink. I jerked my head away. Warden took the cup from my lips. Do you not wish to heal? I stared him out. It must have been an accident that I had survived. There was no reason for them not to have killed me. You were branded, he said. You must allow me to treat the wound for a few days, or it will become infected. I twisted to look at my shoulder, covering my breasts with the sheets. Branded with what? My fingers shook as I traced the taut skin. 20, 59, 40. No. Oh, you bastard, you sick bastard, I'll kill you. Just wait, when you're asleep. My throat was too sore. I stopped, heaving. Warden flicked his gaze over my face, like he was trying to read a foreign language. He wasn't stupid. Why was he looking at me like that? They'd branded me like some kind of animal. Lower than an animal. A number. The silence was broken only by my gasping breaths. Warden placed a gloved hand over my knee. I pulled my leg from his grip, sending a bolt of pain down to my toes. Don't touch me. The brand will stop hurting in time, he said. But your femoral artery is a different matter. He slid his hand lower, pulling the sheets away from my leg. When I saw my bare thigh, I thought I would chuck up again. Swollen past its normal size, it was stained with bruises that had spread almost to my knee. The area around my groin was black and bloodshot. Warden applied just the slightest bit of pressure to my leg, barely enough to spring a hair trigger. I choked. This injury will not repair itself. No wound caused by flux can heal without a second, stronger antidote. I thought I would die if he pressed any harder. Go to hell, I gasped out. There is no hell. There is only ether. I clenched my teeth, shaking with the effort of not sobbing. Warden removed his hand from my leg and turned away. I couldn't tell how long I lay there, weak and delirious. All I could think was how much he must love this, seeing our natural roles restored. It was him with power over me this time, power to watch me suffer and sweat. And this time, it was him with the remedy. Dawn broke. The clock ticked. Warden just sat in his chair, stoking the fire. I had no idea what he was waiting for. If he wanted me to change my mind about the remedy, he was going to be there a long, long time. Maybe he had just been told to watch me, to make sure I didn't top myself. I can't say I wouldn't have tried. The pain was excruciating. My leg was rigid, and it only moved in spasms. The swollen skin strained and glistened, like a blister on the edge of bursting. As the hours crept past, Warden moved from place to place. The window, the armchair, the bathroom, the desk, back to the armchair. Like I wasn't there. Once he left the room and came back with some warm bread, but I pushed it away. I wanted to make him think I was on hunger strike. I wanted my power back. I wanted to make him feel as small as I felt. The pain in my thigh refused to ease. If anything, it got worse. I pressed the blackened skin. I kept on pressing harder and harder until stars burst in my eyes. I had hoped it would make me lose consciousness, just so I could have a few hours of relief, but all it made me do was throw up yet again. Warden watched as I choked acidic bile into a basin. His gaze was empty. He was waiting for me to give in, to beg. I looked at the basin through blurred eyes. I was starting to bring up blood, thick clots of it. My head rolled against the cushions. I must have fallen unconscious. It was getting dark again when I woke. Julian must be wondering where I was, assuming he'd been able to leave his residence. Probably not. My brain could only focus on these things because all my pain inexplicably had gone. So had the sensation in my leg. Fear chilled my spine. I tried to move my toes, to rotate my ankle, but nothing happened. Warden was at my side. I should mention, he said, that if the infection is not treated, you are very likely to lose your leg, or your life. I would have spat at him, but the vomiting had dehydrated me. I shook my head. My vision was fading. Don't be a fool, he grasped my head, made me look at him. You need your legs. He had me in a bind. He was right. I couldn't lose my leg. I needed to run. This time, when he took the back of my head in his hand, I opened my mouth and drank from the goblet. It tasted rank, like earth and metal. Warden nodded. Good. I mustered a look of loathing, but the effect was dampened by relief, as my leg tingled. I drank the foul liquid to the dregs, and wiped my lips with a steady hand. Warden lifted the sheets again. My thigh was already returning to its normal dimensions. We're even now, I whispered, my throat scorched. No more. I healed you, you healed me. You have never healed me. I faltered. What? I have never been injured. You don't remember? It never happened. I didn't believe for a moment that I'd imagined the whole encounter. He was still wearing sleeves, so I could hardly point it out to him. But it had happened. His denial wouldn't make a shade of difference. Then I must have made a mistake, I said. Warden never took his eyes off me. He was looking at me with interest, a cold, dispassionate interest. Yes, he said. You did make a mistake. And that was my warning. The bell chimed in the tower. Warden glanced out of the window. You may go. You're in no fit state to begin training tonight, but you should find something to eat. He indicated the urn on the mantelpiece. There are more Numa in there. Take as many as you need. I don't have any clothes. That is because you are due a new uniform. He held up a pink tunic. Congratulations, Paige. You have been promoted. That was the first time he used my name.
Chapter 9. Variety. I had to get out of this place. That was my first thought when I stepped into the bitter cold. Sheol 1 looked just the same as it did before, just as if Seb had never walked its streets. But I looked different. Instead of white, I wore a pale pink tunic. On my new gilet, the anchor was the same sickly pink. I was stained. I couldn't take another test. I couldn't. If they'd killed a child in the first, what would they do to me in the second? How much blood would be spilled before I was a red jacket? I had to leave. There had to be some way out, even if I had to dance around landmines. Anything was better than this nightmare. As I found a path through the rookery, my right leg weak and heavy, an unfamiliar cold spread through my gut. Each time a performer looked at me, their expression changed. Their features went blank. Their heads went down. My tunic was a warning. Turncoat. Traitor. Stay away. I am a killer. I wasn't a killer. Nashira had killed Seb, not me. But the performers didn't know that. They must despise anyone who wasn't a white jacket. I should have just stayed at Magdalen for the night. But then I would have had to be with Warden, and I couldn't bear to spend another moment in his company. I limped through the claustrophobic passages. I had to find Liss. She could help me out of this nightmare. There had to be a way. Paige? I stopped, my leg shaking. The effort of walking was exhausting. Liss was looking out of her room. She took one glance at my pink tunic and stiffened. Liss, I started. You pass?